funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Do you still get nervous taking a shower at an isolated rural motel? If that question even makes sense to you, you have seen Psycho, one of the most influential movies not only of Alfred Hitchcock's storied career, but of the 20th century and perhaps all of cinema. And while my guest today would argue that Psycho is not Hitchcock's most masterful film, he loves it nonetheless, and certainly cannot deny its extraordinary hold on generations of audiences and movie directors alike. David Thompson is a film critic and commentator. His new book is called The Moment of Psycho: How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. David, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much.
How was this movie ahead of its time?
Well, it changed so many things. It was a picture filled with violence, or the threat of violence, in a way that we had really never seen before. It was a picture that dealt with a disturbed personality. The movies had been very uneasy dealing with crazy people. Generally, they were comic figures. There were not that many movies about real madness. This was a film called Psycho, which introduced a pretty lurid kind of personality disorder. And I would say this, it was a movie that said above all, look, this is a story and it's an entertainment, it's a show. But it's a movie that's been made by somebody with something close to genius, mastery, great, great talent. In other words, it stressed the role of the film director. And it was a movie that I think historically introduced the idea of the film director, the auteur, which became enormously powerful in the 60s and 70s and so on, and played a very big part in the way film swept through higher education and became a subject that could be taught because it could be regarded as a potential work of art.
So you could have film studies in school alongside visual arts programs of other kinds.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's hard to remember this, but if you go back before 1960, there were very, very few colleges and universities in America that offered any film courses at all. By the end of the 60s, it had become almost essential just to keep up that higher education taught film, and most places had programs that would develop into majors. And, of course, in many universities, there was serious filmmaking as a part of the curriculum.
What makes Marion Crane such a fascinating victim?
Well, I think the first thing is that she does a silly thing. She's in a position in life, one that we can all understand and share today. She's short of money. And because she's short of money, excuse me, she can't live with the man she loves. They're separated. So a wad of money passes across her desk, and on an absurd impulse, she thinks she'll steal it. She is actually the person who is the psycho in the first 40 minutes of the picture. She does an irrational, stupid thing. Her better self knows that it's crazy. But she's Janet Leigh. And in 1960, Janet Leigh was a sort of sweetheart figure to the American public. She was sort of, if you were to cast them today, you could have had Jennifer Aniston or Sandra Bullock. She had that kind of, she was pretty, she was attractive, she was sexy, but she was nice. Mm-hmm. She was the girl next door. She was very likable, and you trusted her and you believed in her. So that there is this girl next door who does a foolish thing. Well, anybody can understand that and sympathize with it. And you follow her, and as the film follows her, it kind of grills her. She's put through quite an ordeal in the first 40 minutes of the film.
And there are lots of different ways that Hitchcock uses to build tension, one of which, especially after we've seen it before, is this police officer comes upon her sleeping in her car and suggests she find a nice motel that will be safe.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
And then 40 minutes in, the perspective switches entirely, and suddenly everything is taking place from the vantage point, essentially, of Norman Bates.
Well, except that you're not quite sure whose vantage point it is for a while. You know, when we watch a film, simply to work out what the story is, we need to identify. We identify with people. And one of the things Hitchcock did with Psycho that was outrageous, novel, daring, brilliant, was to have us identify with this character, Marion, and then whisk her away. So that all of a sudden, 40 minutes into the picture, an outrage has occurred, very violent outrage. You're shattered. You're saying, please, movie, don't do that to me again. But also you're saying, who do I hold on to? And the only person you can hold on to is this interesting, rather kind, quiet young man about whom you already have some suspicions because there's a funny quality to him. He seems to have lived alone too much. So that the audience is terribly stranded, if you know what I mean, by what happens in the film and the way it is shown. And you have to make your way out of this sort of dark, haunted house on your own. And that was something that really a movie had never done before. It had never given you a character and then removed the character in that kind of a way.
Let's listen for just a minute to the original movie trailer.
Here we have a quiet little motel. When in fact, it has now become known as the scene of the crime.
You have a vacancy?
Oh, we have 12 vacancies.
You know, this is the first place that looks like it's hiding from the world.
I think that we're all in our private traps, clamped in them. And none of us can ever get out.
Is anyone at home?
Oh, that must be my mother.
Is anything wrong?
Am I acting as if there's something wrong?
She's not missing so much as she's run away.
Put me down!
Mother! Oh, God! Mother!
What are you running away from?
She looked like a wrong one to you.
It's not as if she were a maniac. She just goes a little mad sometimes.
You know, David, listening to that, with exception of the length of it, it's remarkable how modern it sounds.
Well, you're seeing the work of a man who understood film, arguably, better than any director in his time. That trailer was done quite deliberately in the style with which Hitchcock personally introduced the episodes of his television series, which was very popular, which began in the 50s. And, you know, he comes to the motel as if he was the realtor, and wonders whether you might like to purchase the place because it's abandoned, it's for sale, and then suddenly that is interrupted by stuff from the film. But it's a brilliant trailer, and it's so typical of Hitchcock because he couldn't let a foot of film go out under his name without making it original and daring and funny, too. I think you can get a feeling in that trailer, although it's sinister, although The music tells you how violent the film is going to be. There is a kind of sardonic humor to it. And certainly Psycho is a film that the first time you see it scares the wits out of you. The second time you see it, you get the joke. Lines like, my mother's not herself today.
yeah.
You know, things like that. Hitchcock was a great practical joker. He believed the audience deserved to have jokes and tricks played on it. And there are a lot of lines with double meanings, which you only get the second time you see the film. And I think Hitchcock sort of had the instinct that this is a film people were going to be so shocked by, they would go back to. So they'd get a little bit more the second time around.
You know, it makes me, as someone who saw the film much later than it was originally introduced, a little bit envious that I never had the experience of going in there and really being scared the first time. Because, you know, the generations that have come after, we all see the film, but we sort of know what's coming. Can you talk a little bit about, you were a student yourself, a film student, the movie first came out. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I went to see it first day it opened in London. I was English then, and I was at film school, and I adored Hitchcock. I mean, I believe that Hitchcock in the 1950s had made some of the best films available, best films around. So there I go off to see it. Big theater in the West End of London. And there were not that many people there because it was sort of 12 o'clock midday showing. And this huge theater. And now there's something else I should add here. Hitchcock did something for this film that had never been done before. He would not allow people into the movie after it had started. And in the lobby, there was a life-size cardboard figure of Hitchcock wagging his finger at us and saying, no one will be admitted after the film has started. So you knew already that there was some ordeal waiting for you. You knew Hitchcock could handle suspense brilliantly because he'd done that all his career. The novelty was that the violence was so extreme in this film. And he had used violence just as so many films have used violence in the history of film. But he tended to make the violence dainty, pretty, careful. He made it very cinematic. He took a great chance on this film, and I think it's because he had an instinct that the public was restless with censorship and that, you know, both more sex and more violence was on the public mind. They were ready for it. Although he was told by his studio, Paramount, who did not like this project when they saw the screenplay, they said, you'll never get it past the censor, and we really don't encourage you to make this.
We're going to take a quick break now, and then we'll get the story of how exactly he did get it past the censor, because it's a very good story. David Thompson is my guest. He's a film critic and commentator. His newest book is called The Moment of Psycho, How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. We'll resume the conversation in a moment and invite you to join us now by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
That was the unforgettable shower scene from the 1960 Alfred Hitchcock movie Psycho. My guest this hour is film critic and commentator David Thompson. His new book is called The Moment of Psycho, How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. You were mentioning before the break that Hitchcock set out deliberately to sort of push the buttons of the censors at this time when he felt like it was time to really dispense with a lot of that. And he was not above trying to befriend them in order to get his way.
Oh, no. He was... He was a great manipulator, and he I think, had been waiting for the right opportunity to sort of push that envelope further, and Psycho proved to be it. But he had been cultivating the head of the censorship board, a man named Jeffrey Sherlock. He made friends with him. They had lunch together. They chatted, and... you know, Hitch would sometimes take Sherlock into his confidence and say, you know, it's awfully difficult sometimes to get a scene right the way you want it as the storyteller and to keep it within your bounds, to keep it within the bounds of censorship. So he encouraged Sherlock to feel that he was a collaborator almost. And then when Psycho came along, he had... several test situations in the film, and he won them all, and he got what he wanted passed. He did put a couple of things into the film that he was prepared to sacrifice. He was so calculating about it, he filmed a couple of scenes that he didn't actually want in the film, scenes that he knew would be questionable, so that when it got down to the table banging, final arguments, he could say, well, I'll take those two out if you let me keep the others. And he ended up doing three things, you could say, really. The first scene of the film shows you a couple who have clearly just had sex. You were not really supposed to do that as blatantly as that.
And still half-dressed or not dressed at all?
That's right, that's right. Then there is a scene where a toilet flushes. Now, if you can believe it, that was against the code. You could not really show a toilet flushing in an American film because of what it suggested.
And of course, there's not human waste in the toilet at the time.
No. It's Marion flushes away a scrap of paper where she's done a calculation. And then, of course, there was the shower murder itself. That was the big set piece. That was the big one. And Hitchcock really said to Sherlock, look, Jeffrey, do you see how marvelously filmed it is? Do you know, in that whole sequence, you can't believe this, you do not actually see a knife pierce skin. I followed your rule, you see what I mean? Now, of course, you don't see it, but what you feel and what is suggested to you is beyond words. It was a devastating scene. It is still, I think, 50 years later, an extraordinarily violent scene. It is also, and this is part of the conundrum of cinema and Hitchcock, it is a beautiful scene, if you like, because it is so made up out of fragments of film cut together with a rhythm and with the music that you just heard. And he conned Sherlock into accepting this. Now, of course, what this led to, historically, was that in the course of the 1960s, beginning with Psycho, I would say, censorship really broke down. And the code that had existed for over 30 years in filmmaking about what you could and could not show, what you could and could not say, by the end of the 60s, that was over. And our movies were able to do more or less everything.
You know, you could certainly argue, David, that censorship broke down not only in terms of movie content in the 1960s, but in terms of just human behavior in Western society. Do you think that Hitchcock anticipated what was coming or that in some way he contributed to it?
Well, I think it's a bit of both. I do think that as a filmmaker and as a, let's say, a natural voyeur who loved looking at women and spying on women in difficult, stressful situations, he wanted to go further. As a man who had filmed murder many times, he wanted to go further. And he was pushing the envelope. And I think you're quite right. You know, part of what we understand by the 60s is a breakdown in cultural attitudes. It's certainly a time of when sexuality breaks out. The pill is what made sexuality so much more widespread. It's the age of Vietnam. It's the age of student protests. There's an enormous amount of violence just in television newsreels in the 1960s. Now, Hitchcock could not have predicted all of those things exactly, but I think he had an instinct that it was coming. But at the same time, I think that Psycho was so brilliant a film that it showed lesser directors how you could open the gates.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also send email to think@kera.org, and that's where we hear from Eric in Dallas. He writes, 2 years before Psycho, Janet Leigh made another film, Touch of Evil, in which she also checks into a seedy, isolated motel and has an unpleasant experience. Do you know if Hitchcock or his screenwriter had this in mind in some sense and were hoping to subvert audience expectations based on the earlier film?
Very good question. It refers to Touch of Evil, the Orson Welles movie, where, yes, Janet Leigh has a very hard time in a motel again. Now, I could find no reference from Hitchcock that he had seen Touch of Evil. I believe he was keeping tight-lipped about it. I think he must have seen it, and I think that he enjoyed the way in which he was putting Janet Leigh through it. He was very fond of her, I think. But there's certainly comparisons between the two films. Yeah.
Were the two leads of this film always the ones he had in mind?
He cast Anthony Perkins first, which is interesting, I think, because I think he always saw Norman as the eventual central character and the most original figure, if you like, a new figure. And Perkins was fairly new to the screen. He was being touted at that time as a romantic lead. The world as a whole did not know or had not caught up with the fact that he was gay. This is the time when gay actors like Rock Hudson, for instance, are playing heterosexual parts. He was fascinated by Perkins. I don't know that Hitchcock knew Perkins was gay, but I think he felt that Perkins had a wonderful quality, a rare quality that he wanted to put on film. So Perkins was absolutely automatic. As far as Marion Crane is concerned, the girl, he had a list of about half a dozen other people he would have been prepared for. Lana Turner was on the list. There were a few others, but Janet Leigh, I think, got it. Maybe because of Touch of Evil. Maybe he saw Touch of Evil and he thought, aha, there's a sort of internal rhyming. But I think above all, Janet Leigh got it because she was so beloved in America. She and Tony Curtis were still married at that time, and they were the sort of the ideal Hollywood marriage. She was a great trooper. She was a very amiable person, and everyone loved working with her. And I think she had an every woman quality that he liked.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that Hitchcock loved looking at beautiful women. In fact, he had a habit of sort of falling in love with his leading ladies, if not acting on that.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the most interesting things about his films is that as a fantasist, and of course, remember, Hitchcock was not the most attractive of people physically. He was always seriously overweight. I think he looked at women and he adored them from far. Some people believe he actually made passes at his actresses and even had affairs with them. I don't think that happened until he worked with Tippi Hedren on the birds and Marnie, but I can't be sure. I certainly think, and it's part of the erotic tension in his films, that he looked at these women and yearned to possess them. People like Ingrid Bergman, Joan Fontaine, Grace Kelly. Grace Kelly, I think, was probably his most adored figure in films, and she is there in several films in the 1950s that he made before she went off and married the Prince of Monaco.
And she had sort of hoped for a while that she might keep working after that.
He dreamed for years that he would bring her back, and certainly for Marnie, the film where he had to use Tippi Hedren, he really had high hopes that Grace Kelly would be allowed to come back. But in fact, the court protocol in Monaco wouldn't let her act again.
David, why did he shoot Psycho in black and white?
Well, I think it was a censorship reason. And I think that if all that blood had been red, I don't think he would have got it past the censor. I think the redness of the blood would have been too much for the public at that time. So I think it was principally for that. I think it was also because it's a very grim world in Psycho. There isn't a great deal of romance in the film. A lot of the characters are rather mean-minded, tough, abrasive people. It's, you know, it begins in Phoenix, and I don't want to be unkind to Phoenix, Arizona, but it's not one of the great, beautiful cities in America. Most of it then takes place on the road and in a tiny town up in Northern California and in this motel, a rather shabby motel. It's a gritty, non-romantic film. So black and white suited it, and Hitchcock enjoyed black and white. But I think above all, it was so that he didn't have to show the blood as red.
You mentioned it taking place, part of it at least, on the road. And we should remind people that the interstate highway system was a brand new thing at this point, to the extent that it was, in some ways, almost a character of its own within the film.
Well, it is. And this is unusual for Hitchcock. He tended to make his films in big cities and that kind of thing. He liked city life. He was not terribly drawn to rural life. But, you know, to follow Psycho properly, you do need to know the highway system of California. And as you pointed out, it was relatively new at that time. And this is a film that takes note of it.
Was the term psycho in popular use before this movie came out? Would you call someone who was acting up at work a psycho?
I think it was coming into use, but I think the decision to use it as the title was the thing that really carried it forward. It was a term of comic abuse, I think, among kids. As I said earlier in our conversation, the movies were very uneasy about dealing with disturbed personalities, and Norman Bates is certainly the first great psychotic character in American film, I would say.
I want to talk about this. You have a list of movies in the book that you think are the sort of direct descendants of Psycho for a variety of reasons. On this list, you place Jerry Lewis's The Nutty Professor. Can you talk about how you figured out?
Yeah, well, that was a bit of a joke. But The Nutty Professor is a version of the Jekyll and Hyde story,
yeah,
in which there are two personalities, one of which is sweet, lovely, amiable, decent, but plain and ugly. The other of which is handsome, attractive, nasty, edgy, cruel. Now, if you put it like that, I think you see the two sides of Norman Bates. And I think it's part of the idea that we can no longer trust people because they're good-looking or bad-looking. That doesn't really mean too much about what may lurk behind the look.
David Thompson is my guest. His new book is called The Moment of Psycho, How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. 1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Mike in Irving. Hi, Mike.
Howdy. I have a question and a comment for you.
Okay.
The comment is that as far as Psycho being in black and white, The scholarship that I have read on the film, and I'm a bit of an amateur scholar where this is concerned, is that that was done so that he could use the cameras from his television show, which he was filming at the time. So it was done as a money-saving measure, not for artistic reasons.
I buy that. It's certainly true that Hitchcock had a filming unit that he had used for the television show. And to the extent that people were nervous of Psycho commercially, he wanted to make it as cheaply as possible. So, yes, I do buy that. I think that was part of the reason for it. But then I ask you to consider whether in 1960 the public could have taken the film and the censorship could have let it go through if the blood in that bathroom scene was the real color. I think it's the two reasons together.
And did you also have a question, Mike?
Yeah, the question or something that I wanted your guest to address, and by the way, I'm enjoying the show very much, is the impact of Bernard Herrmann's score on the film.
Ah, well...
Tell me what you think about that.
Well, Bernard Herrmann is one of the great composers of film music in America. He had begun with Citizen Kane, which was a pretty good place to start. And he'd worked with Hitchcock quite a lot. And here's the story I would tell about that, because I think it really makes it clear what Herrmann did.
Let's leave a little, it's not quite Hitchcockian suspense, but we need to take a quick break here. So
okay.
I'll have you
okay.
tell the story after the break.
All
My
right.
guest is David Thompson. His newest book is called The Moment of Psycho, How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. You can enrich your life and your career with hundreds of non-credit courses. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have, years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them I killed those girls and that man. As if I could do anything except just sit and stare, like one of his stuffed birds. Oh, they know I can't even move a finger, and I won't. I'll just sit here and be quiet, just in case they do suspect me. They're probably watching me. Well, let them. Let them see what kind of a person I am. I'm not even going to swat that fly. I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Mother Bates there from the 1960 Alfred Hitchcock film Psycho. We're here with film critic and commentator David Thompson, whose newest book is called The Moment of Psycho, How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. And of course, we heard some of Bernard Herrmann's score there, and you were going to tell us what we should take note of with regard to the music in this film.
Well, there's a story that some of the crew members would joke with Hitchcock while they were shooting the film and say, well, I don't know, Hitch. You're a master of suspense and crime, but this is pretty far-fetched, this material. This isn't your usual dish of tea, and maybe it goes too far. And Hitchcock said, well, you just wait and see, wait and see. And then one day, Herrmann, who had been off composing and recording some of the music, brought in a section of music, and they laid it together with the scenes that it was meant to cover. And everybody got to hear and see and feel the whole experience the way Hitchcock had intended it. And everyone suddenly got the kind of lurid, sinister opera that they were making. The music is a vital part of the film. You've heard enough of it, I think, you listeners, in snatches here, to hear how far screaming sounds and the string sounds are made to come together, how many violent strokes there are in the strings and that kind of thing. It's an absolute masterpiece of a score. Didn't even get a nomination, if you can believe it. It's a score that I think has gone down in history, and along with Citizen Kane and Taxi Driver, because he did those films too, it's one of the handful of scores that Bernard Herrmann is justly famous for.
David Thompson is my guest. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. We go next to Mike in Dallas. Hey, Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi, my question is, what is the symbolism of the stuffed animals?
Oh, the birds.
Yes.
Well, I think it's one of Hitchcock's darker jokes, because we will discover, and I don't want to spoil the ending.
It's a 50-year-old movie. You can.
Well, all right. We've all seen it. Norman keeps his mother stuffed. Taxidermy is his hobby, and as he says to Marion, a boy should have a hobby. I mean, this is really quite ghoulish stuff, and again, it's got a lot of Hitchcock's humor to it, but it's a kind of nastiness that really was not common or prevalent in cinema in the 60s. The slasher violence that we're used to today, and the attitudes to it, a lot of those things I think you really can date back to Psycho, although Hitchcock handled them in a characteristically dainty, precise, cinematic way in Psycho.
Was his very next film, in fact, The Birds?
It was The Birds, yes.
So you wonder if he saw that set and started finished with
thoughts. Well, I think he was thinking. He was a man who was consumed with the ideas for films, and I think he was certainly thinking about how you could photograph birds and make them frightening. He had that sort of visual imagination. Everything in his films he would draw out in advance. He didn't just script the film, he storyboarded it so that he could show the crew shot by shot what he intended. And if you remember, in the supper scene where Marion and Norman are together, there are some very sinister angled shots of the stuffed birds on the wall. And certainly you can feel, when you know it's coming, you can feel the birds coming.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We go next to Lake Worth and speak with Don. Hi, Don.
Hi. He mentioned that Bates was probably the first psychopath in film, but I think I know of an earlier one. If you know the film The Secret Beyond the Door.
Oh, yes, I do indeed, and that's a good comparison. A film that was a big failure in its time and not a well-known film, not a film that passed into sort of public understanding, but it's a Fritz Lang film, and indeed you're quite right, it has a very disturbed person there. But I think the difference I would point to is that Hitchcock made Norman Bates a household name, whereas very, very few Americans have ever heard of Secret Beyond the Door.
What did the critics make of Psycho?
Well, as Hitchcock would have said, the critics give me a hard time. The critics and the Academy. This is a man, if you could believe it, that never won the Oscar for directing. A shameful thing as far as the Academy is concerned. The critics were shocked like other people. Some people saw the immense cinematic skill, but some people thought that Hitchcock had been carried away by violence and they didn't like the film for that reason. Some people thought it was just a bloody mess and an exploitation film. And generally speaking, Hitchcock did not get fully understood at the time he was doing his best work.
Did audiences who went to see this film when it was first out have to cope with ambivalence about their own enjoyment of a film where this is the subject?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think that there were very, very violent mixed reactions. I can remember when I saw it, people walked out. There was a lot of walkout from the film. You know, it was too much for people. But word of mouth grew. It was as if people said, oh, you mustn't see this film, Psycho. It is so horrible. It is so shocking. You'll never believe what happens. Well, of course, that's the kind of talk that actually
make a beeline for
can
the theater.
Build an audience. So, yes, I think that I think people became fascinated with the film. It was a huge success. It was by far and away the biggest success Hitchcock had ever had. He had a deal on the film where he had an unusual ownership percentage. So it had the result of making him, he'd always been prosperous, he'd always done well, but it made him really a rich man.
Yeah, Paramount thought it was taking the safe end of the gamble by making him own 60%.
That's right. What a misjudgment. Yeah, yeah. But you see, I think he had an instinct of what the audience was ready for, and film companies just didn't pick up on it.
You don't think this is his best film?
Personally, if you're going to throw me on a desert island and I can have one Hitchcock film, I would take Rear Window or North by Northwest. I think they're more enjoyable. However, I think it is a great film. It's a landmark. It's a turning point, and it's a film of extraordinary skill. One of the interesting things about Hitchcock that has to, it ties in with what I was talking about earlier about the way film became a subject in education. Hitchcock is a great person to teach for this reason. He's always doing something with the medium that shows you what film can do. So you can stop and start a Hitchcock film anywhere and demonstrate the power of the medium. And that was a big issue in his life. Hitchcock did not necessarily want to be considered an artist, but he wanted film to be considered as an art form.
Do you have any idea what kinds of films he might be making today if he were working?
Oh, what an interesting question. What an interesting question. Well, I suspect if he had lived on, he'd be a very old, sad man by now, of course, but if he'd lived on, I think he would have become revolted by the violence that he sees, that he would see around him in cinema today. So much of it, so much worse done than his violence. And I think he might have gone back to being more a comedian, and there was always a comedian in him. But, you know, what he loved was a situation like Rear Window. A man is laid up, he's in plaster, he can't sleep, and he wonders, did he see a murder across the way? That kind of situation, always, always based upon visibility and seeing. All of Hitchcock's films are about seeing in that way. And that's what he loved to tell stories for.
You've already mentioned Taxi Driver, and we talked about The Nutty Professor. Can you talk about some of the other films that were sort of begotten by Psycho?
Well, it's really the level of violence. I mean, you take a film like Bonnie and Clyde. Now, Bonnie and Clyde is a very different film. It's a sort of gangster film. But if you remember Bonnie and Clyde in 67, it's only a few years after Psycho. One of the remarkable things about that film, and it was much commented on at the time, was the ease with which the audience went from laughter and excitement and pleasure to horror at the violence. Now, I think that Psycho is on to that, too. A lot of the jokes in Psycho rub right up against the really nasty moments. And Hitchcock was alerting us, I think, to the way film's mood can shift so quickly, and asking the question, can you keep up with those mood shifts?
The other interesting thing about Hitchcock was that he had no qualms about working in television. These days, for a film director to also be directing a television show is really unusual. And if anywhere it happens, like on HBO or somewhere. Was there that sort of bias back then?
Back then, if you were in movies, you were generally advised to keep out of television. And it's quite right that when Hitchcock started his television show, a lot of people thought that that was beneath him. He was just simply following the audience, I think. And, of course, by then, the audience in its majority had gone over to television. Now, today, I think it's a very different matter, in fact. And you mentioned HBO and the other channel, the other cable channels like that. I think, personally, some of the best work in American film these days is being done for cable television as opposed to the theatrical movies. And I don't think the snobbery that existed towards television is nearly as strong today.
Can you talk about why Psycho is still an important movie? I know it's sort of part of the canon that, that film students have to watch in their very first year.
Well, I think it's important because it still works. I think if you show Psycho to a teenager, say, today, who's never seen it, never heard about it, they're absolutely gripped and compelled by it, and they want to talk about it. In other words, the film still works, and the murder, the Shaw murder, is still frightening. Beyond that, I think it's a matter of history and where the film stands in history, and also, as Hitchcock would have loved to hear me saying, it shows that individuals, artists, make films. And the best test of a film is often who made it. And that you can put your personality into the making of a film in much the same way you can into writing a poem or writing a symphony. Psycho... You cannot name Psycho without naming Hitchcock at the same time. A lot of the public don't know who's directed their films. Psycho equals Hitchcock.
David Thompson is a film critic and commentator. His newest book is called The Moment of Psycho, How Alfred Hitchcock Taught America to Love Murder. David, it's been a really fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.